Tandem Nomads, episode 18.
The poetry of Khalil Gibran. One of the things he says is that, you know, our children are arrows in which they don't belong to us, but we are the bow in which we shoot the arrows into the world.
Welcome to Tandem Nomads, where inspiring expat partners from around the world share with you how they turn the challenges of relocation into great opportunities. So are you following your partner abroad for his or her career? Then Tandem Nomads is the place for you. Go to tandemnomads.com and sign up for the newsletter. Hello, hello, Nomad Nation. This is ML Deregi. In the previous episode with our guest, Tayo Roxon, we had quite an interesting conversation about the personal development and identity construction of kids and teens who are raised in various countries during their childhood. We call them third culture kids, or so to say, TCKs. Today, I would like to bring to you some insights and guidance on the academic education of TCKs, how to make some decisions regarding the school choices and educational support we can bring to our kids when we live in a global nomadic life. From my personal experience as a TCK, I know that this was one of the major concerns for my parents, and I have heard a lot of parents say that too. So I brought to you today a great expert in the matter, and I'm so happy to introduce you to Rebecca Grappo. Rebecca?
Hello.
Hi. Are you ready for the ride?
I am.
Wonderful. Rebecca is American and has lived in 11 foreign countries. She has raised 3 kids abroad and is very much aware of the unique issues relating to third culture kids or TCKs. In fact, not only Rebecca has the personal experience as an expat partner raising kids abroad, but she also has the professional experience of managing kids' education abroad. Rebecca is the founder of RNG International Consultants that provides innovative solutions and educational advice for students and families around the world. Rebecca, this was a very short bio of your experience. What can you tell us more about your personal life and how you get to this expertise that you have today?
Well, I think what was interesting is before we started doing this for your podcast, you and I were talking about the challenges of being the trailing spouse and finding your own identity. So I think that in addition to bringing expertise to the table about third culture kids and educating them abroad, I also, like you, was a trailing spouse, and that's how I started this, and trying to figure out how to marry my professional interests with my personal interests and my need to be flexible and to be able to live around the world and yet still do something that I consider to be very meaningful. So when I started my own practice 10 years ago, I kind of crossed my fingers and hoped that this was going to work, and it's actually exceeded my expectations, and we are a legitimate business, and I have a full-time employee who happens to be a school psychologist and also shares the same last name because she's my adult daughter. And we're working with students and families around the world. So it's worked out better than I ever expected it to.
Wonderful. So how can we make sure to live a nomadic life with our kids and still provide them a stable and successful education? What are the key elements to consider, you know, what kind of choices of school we should make or not?
Well, that's actually a really involved question, but I'll try to keep it brief. I think that, first of all, is to be thinking about the school that's going to be a good fit for your child. So perhaps there's one school in town that everybody goes to and everybody says, oh, it's such a good school. And it probably is, but we have to be sure that we're talking about, is this a good school for your child and your child's needs? I think that especially if we're talking about kids that have an exceptional interest or an exceptional learning style, that we really be looking for fit. So if we have a student who's really interested in the arts, then it's a good idea to make sure they have a robust arts program. If we have a student who has a learning difference, then we need to make sure that they have the learning support that that child is going to need. And when I say child, I'm speaking of children through adolescence. So we're talking about all the way through primary and secondary school. So I think, and then the next thing is I think we need to be thinking about
planning. So I actually have a credential as a certified educational planner. And one of the things that I'm always looking at is the end, and then we look backwards. So what is the end goal? Where is it that this child is probably going to end up living or studying? And will they be prepared to live and study in that particular country? So if, let's say, we have a German child who is going to an English-speaking school with the intention that eventually they're going to be going back to a German university, we want to make sure that we fill in any holes and that they have the academic German that they're going to need in order to be able to perform in a German system. And I just use that as an example, fill in the blank.
That's a very good example, because it's one of the major issues, I think, of expat parents. It's like,
exactly.
What are we going to do when we come back home? Because it's also very expensive. Most of the time, companies would pay for the international schools abroad. But once we come back home, most of the time, we just can't afford it. So.
Well, exactly. And then knowing, you know, whether or not, especially this becomes very important in secondary school or what we call high school, making sure that credits match up so that the student is going to be on track for graduation and is going to be meeting the requirements necessary for university in whatever country that they're going to be studying. So that's it in a nutshell. I mean, I could go on and on for an hour about what we should be looking for in an international school. The third thing I just do want to touch on very, very briefly, and that is the governance of the school.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very important that we look at schools that are child-focused, student-centered. And in doing so, I'm always looking to see, okay, is this a for-profit or a non-profit school? That doesn't necessarily mean that a for-profit school is bad, but I would investigate. I would look to see whether or not they really have the curriculum that they say they have. I would look at the administration and the staffing to find out where are the teachers from, how are they trained, do they continue to engage in professional development, where is the leadership? Because it starts at the top, so you want to make sure that the school has a great leadership style. And whether or not when you go to the school and you walk around, do you get a good feeling about it? Are kids happy? You know, I tour schools all the time, and I can usually tell pretty quickly when I walk in whether or not it's a place of with positive energy or whether it's a place where there's a lot of tension. So these are all just other things that people could be looking for in choosing a school.
Those are really actually a lot of good information that you've been sharing here. But I have some questions about when you say it would be interesting to look at the curriculum, the credit, the leadership. And you also talked about feeling, like emotionally how we feel about, which is important. Sometimes we should listen to our guts. But looking at curriculum, credits, and leadership might need a bit more knowledge, doesn't it? Like, how can we really evaluate the curriculum of a school, for instance?
Well, that's another big question. That is a big question. You know, so now I'm going to use an American example because that's going to be an easy one for me. So if I'm looking at a high school that says they have an American curriculum, I'm going to be looking at the variety of courses that they offer. I'm going to be asking to look at the school profile. I'm going to be looking to see whether or not they have a professional college counseling staff. And if they have created a school profile that can be given to universities to explain the kinds of courses, the number of students who end up going on to university, the resources, the accreditation, all those things that go into making up a good school. So I'm going to be looking at the variety of course selection. What we're seeing in so many international schools right now is the move towards the International Baccalaureate. And that's another great program. But what I would be looking at is this a program something that is actually going to be a good fit for my child? Because, you know, it's a lot of work and it's pretty intense. And I've seen a lot of students where they're really in over their head. So I would be looking at that as well. The other thing is I really urge families when they do have kids in secondary school that they try to be consistent. So if you're going to choose British education, stick with British education all the way through. If you're going to choose the IB path, stick with it. If you're going to choose an American path, stick with it. But when you mix and match, it's not impossible, but it does make things a lot more complicated.
I agree with that. I definitely agree. I can testify it from my own experience.
Yeah.
When I've been like switching from a lot of different schools, I start with American kindergarten, French kindergarten, Iraqi elementary, Algerian elementary, and then French school, and then French correspondence. So all this has brought a lot of extra, like, broader vision, but at the same time, it's difficult, I think, to create a bit of stability in the learning process. But I think the challenge here is to have a vision on what we're going to do in the future. And it's quite difficult, I think, sometimes for parents to know what's going to happen to them in the future.
The other thing that I would say is that your personality, from what I know of you, is that you are the kind of person who can adapt to change, and that you do know how to easily connect with people socially. And, you know, your social emotional intelligence is off the charts, you know? And so I can see where moving around the world was probably very challenging for you. And yet you were one of the students who ended up landing on their feet, you know, that you could always find a way to connect and make new friends and make the best of a situation. But, you know, not all kids are able to do that. Mm-hmm. And it really, so much of this is influenced by parents, of course, but some of it is also just the makeup of the child and, you know, what I call the way they're wired at the factory. You know, even within a family, you might have several children in the family and a couple of children are going to bounce along and do just great, but one may not. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you were really lucky, I think, that you were able to transition through so many different types of mm-hmm. systems and end up on your feet. Yeah. And that's really great.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I worry about the kids, though, who are not as adept at making new friends or comfortable socially or finding it hard to connect in with the new community and really struggle with that, because we work with those kinds of kids as well.
No, I would really focus on that advice of consistency that you just gave us. If there's one thing I would like to take away from the whole episode, it would be this one, because although, yes, I landed on my feet, I still think that it is challenging and it wasn't an easy path, and I think that it could have been much easier. So if there is a way to try to plan long term and just pick a choice according to where we see our lives going, like one type is cool. And I think that's a very important advice that you gave here, Becky.
Oh, good. Well, and the other thing I would say is that, you know, sometimes it's not always possible. So let's say that you have a family that is moving from country to country every couple of years because of the nature of the work. And in one country, let's say that they were able to have a British school, and the next country there is no British school, and we're now getting to the point where it's really important, or an American school, or whatever, fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. And now we have to make some hard decisions. And there are times when I really do think that boarding school can give that consistency, not only socially, but academically, that's going to be really important for a student, especially as they prepare for university studies.
Yeah, but talking about I was planning on asking the question at the end for boarding school, but I'm happy that you bring it now because that's an option actually to bring stability, is to just put our kids in a boarding school. It comes with, I guess, some emotional issues to have your kids away for so long. Is it what you mean by boarding school, right? Is like,
yeah. So a boarding school is a residential school,
exactly,
where, you know, they're going to be living together in community, and
which is not necessarily in the same country sometimes as where the parents are.
Correct.
Yeah. What, according to you, are the criteria to say, okay, that's the best solution right now? Even if it's hard emotionally, this is the best thing for our kid. What are the elements we have to consider to decide to put our kids in a boarding school?
Well, you know, it's funny you should ask that, because I had personal experience with this, not only professional. I think that when my children were young and we were moving around the world, I was one of those who said, over my dead body, I would never send my child to boarding school. But you know how it is when you tempt fate. That's exactly the lesson that you're going to have to learn, right? So, you know, when one of my children was in a country where we were assigned, and the school was not a good fit for her needs, and we needed to make that decision. And as a mother, I know that it was an incredibly emotional decision for me, because I felt like I was missing out. I was losing time. I really struggled with it. there finally came a point when I decided, you know what, this is not about me. This has to be about her and what's in her best interest. And it is not in her best interest to stay here. Her best interests are going to be better served somewhere else. And I was able to, you know, move forward emotionally by realizing that I wanted the best for my child. I don't know if you ever read the poetry of Khalil Gibran.
Oh, yeah. And
one of the things he says is that, you know, our children are arrows in which they don't belong to us, but we are the bow in which we shoot the arrows into the world, or something like that. Everybody go and Google the poem about children. And that was what stuck in my mind, that, you know, really she doesn't belong to me and that this is what I need to do for her. So that's my personal story. I think that when we're working with families, a lot of families are struggling with this very decision and like really wondering, is this going to be in our best interest? And what I have to say is this to me is a critical point, and that is that, again, the school has to be a good fit. Mm-hmm. And so you need to know who is the administration, what is their philosophy, and what is there really a strong boarding community so that there is this community that steps in for family and really supports the student. Mm-hmm. Because clearly there are lots of places where kids are going to get a great education. But I've seen hundreds of boarding schools, and there are schools that I love and there are schools that I'm not so crazy about. The schools that I absolutely love are the ones that really help an adolescent develop into the person that they need to be. And those are such extremely formative years that you want them to be in a place with just tons of positive role models, experiences, and the opportunity for self-growth. Not just about the academics.
Interesting. And how would you summarize briefly your daughter's experience? How would she talk about it right now, her experience in boarding school?
And so now, if she has the opportunity, she says that's what she would want for her own children.
Very interesting.
So there you go. She remains tied to the alumni network, and I think that now she looks back with a lot of pride in the kind of education she received and the kind of people that she met along the way.
Wonderful. So far, if I have to summarize right now what's been said in this like 15 minutes, the first thing that I take away is the importance of consistency, the importance of getting as much information as we can on the schools and how their curriculum, credits, etc. And the third one, to consider the option of boarding school.
And I'd add one more in there, and that is the importance of fit.
Yeah, how it fits, you know, the personality.
How it fits the values of a family.
Exactly. So can you guide us in that? How do we do that? How do we find out if it fits to the values of the family and the personality of the child?
Well, I think first of all, the easy answer is call us. Because that's what we do. So let me just say how we do it. So okay. When we do it, we do have an intake where we have a lot of detailed questions we ask both of the parents and of the student to get to know their child. And then through multiple conversations, really trying to capture the essence of a child's personality and what it is that they're looking for. We're also looking for their academic abilities, strengths, and weaknesses. In their interests. So we want to make sure that we're looking for a school that is going to be able to meet some of their interests. So for example, I'm working with a young man right now who really, really wants to be an architect. And I've been looking at boarding schools that are going to have, as part of their art department, a really, really good pre-architecture program so that he can explore that, so that if that is what he wants to do, he'll have had some rich experiences in that area. So, you know your child, know your child's strengths and weaknesses, their academic abilities. I also think it's really important that they be in a school that's going to be an academic fit. I think we don't want them to be in a place that's going to be too easy, where they're not challenged enough. Mm-hmm. We also don't want them to be in a place that might be where they're going to be in over their head. And sometimes sometimes families will come
And they've got a list of schools in their minds because of the name and reputation of a school. But once you get to know the child, you realize, whoa, that would not be a good place at all for this particular child, because it's not the right fit. So these are some of the things that I think are important. The other thing is to be able to actually, if possible, go and visit the schools and see for yourself, you know, when you walk on campus. I have a long list of things that I'm looking for, but I'm looking for little things in the daily interactions of students as well. So I'll give you an example. I was in one boarding school that has a significant day population, and I noticed that in the student lounge after class, all the day students were sitting around on their phones, headphones in their ears, and not talking or interacting with one another. Mm. And after I saw that, it didn't matter what wonderful, glowing things they tried to tell me about their school, that's what I remembered. And that is that they were not engaging with each other. And
so we should pay attention to not only the curriculum, but also how the atmosphere in the school is, how maybe kids interact with each other, but also kids with their teachers and the staff among themselves.
Absolutely.
Very interesting.
Absolutely.
Now, because we mentioned a lot the boarding schools, I would like to talk about more about the schools who are in the countries where we are. And from my experience, I know that most of the schools that expat parents go to are international school, American school, British school, and in some cases, French and German schools. Mm-hmm. So I was always wondering, in each of these schools, how does it work actually? Do they have is it one brand, or is it like every school in each country just organizes the curriculum and the regulations, locally? How does it work? I have no idea how these schools function.
That's a great question. Yeah, that's a really great question. Well, one thing I know that a lot of times in different countries, people tend to look at the school where embassy kids are going. So if kids from the British embassy are going to the British school, it probably means the British embassy is going to be pretty involved. American kids are, if they are predominantly going to one particular school, chances are the American embassy is involved. And that, I'm not saying that means that's the only school to look at, but I'm saying in general, that's a pretty good sign. One of the things that, in order for it to be a school that receives assistance from the U.S. Department of State, it needs to be organized as a not-for-profit school and also a secular school. So it can't be a religious school and still receive official U.S. government support. Now, the U.S. government does not own these schools or govern these schools. I'm just talking about giving some support. Go ahead.
Non-profit? Are the American schools and the British schools?
Well, it depends. So some schools are organized as a nonprofit, mm-hmm. and they have a board and a board of directors, and the board of directors is really, you know, governing the school, mm-hmm. and they are the ones who can hire and fire the school superintendent or headmaster or whatever you want to call the head of school and principals, etc. And so basically the head of school then reports to the board, and the board is the one in collaboration with the administration of the school that governs the school. So a for-profit school is going to have an owner. Mm-hmm. And then as the school owner is, you know, basically they still might have a board, but it's going to be, and there's so many different variations on this theme that I can't overgeneralize, but you know, it's not the same as a not-for-profit board. So in some cases, I have seen some cases of schools that might say American in the name or might say international in the name. But if you look closely, they are owner. They do have an owner, and they are very much profit-driven. Mm-hmm. So then you have to kind of look for even more closely about, well, how student-centered are they? And I think when you talk to a lot of people in the community, you can find that out. I would talk to teachers if you have a chance to meet teachers in an informal setting. If you talk to teachers and ask them if they're happy with their contracts or happy with their housing or happy with the lifestyle that they have for their families, you're going to learn a lot about the governance of the school.
Very good advice.
Because, you know, there have been
your own informant.
Yeah, really, because there are schools overseas where, you know, teachers sign on to, you know, they're kind of on the international circuit. They enjoy teaching in international schools, and they get there and they realize that maybe the terms of the contract were exaggerated or that they're not being fulfilled. And I always, here's another question. I always want to know about teacher turnover. What is the average length of stay of a teacher? How long do they stay? If you're in a school where there's a revolving door, then you need to be careful. If you see a school where teachers are happy and they're staying for a long time, to me, that's a good indication that it's a well-run school where they value teachers and the role teachers have, and that they're going to be, you know, their attitudes and their morals and their values are in the right place.
Wonderful.
That's just a generalization. Yeah,
that's very good advice that you've been saying here. So if I just have to summarize, basically there's no like homogeneous organization or something on top of all American schools or British schools or international schools. They basically organize themselves locally, depending on the government can more or less be involved, but it really depends from a country to another, doesn't it?
Okay, so more detail then. The other thing to look for is accreditation.
Okay.
So a really good school will have accreditation from an internationally known accreditation agency. So accreditation, first of all, these schools need to be licensed by the Ministry of Education or whatever in the countries in which they're operating. So they have to be able to operate there. But then they also should have an outside accreditation agency. So I've been on a couple of school faculties when we've gone through this process. We've had to, you know, be very, very clear about the curriculum we write, the mission statement of the school, professional development of the teachers, safety standards. It's so long and involved. I mean, usually to get ready for an inspection takes almost over a year of intensive effort on the part of everyone on the staff to get ready for that accreditation team. And when the accreditation team comes in, they're going to go through everything with a fine-tooth comb and present recommendations and findings. And then a lot of times schools have things that they have to work on and then go back to the accreditation agency before they finally get reaccredited. So looking for the accreditation of a school to me is really, really important.
Very good point.
If a school's accreditation has been pulled, then that to me is a warning sign. Mm-hmm. If a school has no accreditation, to me that's a warning sign. And my focus is on American schools, so I do not pretend to be an expert on British education, but I believe that the British education is governed a little bit more closely from the UK, mm-hmm. in terms of a national curriculum that they all agree upon.
Okay.
But I'm not an expert on
How about international schools? How are they related to, we have it's easy to say American schools can be, American government can be involved, British. What does it mean, international school, at the end of the day?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. Go and look. Go and look. And I think that you can find also where the administration of a school is and the teachers, where they're from. You're going to find out whether or not you're going to see the kind of the ethos and the character of a school mm-hmm. coming through that. But again, these are all more involved questions where parents really need to be doing their homework.
This is, I think, a great thing that you said here. There are two, maybe in terms of administration and paperwork, we should look for is the accreditation and the license. If they don't have that, then we can start questioning seriously.
Right.
We've been talking a lot about your experience with assessing kids. And you mentioned, you know, I was asking you, how do you know if a school fits to the personality of the kid and the family's value? And this is exactly what you do. You help families find out what's the right fit. From all the assessments you've done, what are the major challenges you've noticed and major profiles you found out?
I think one of the biggest challenges for families that are moving internationally is whether or not their child has any exceptional learning needs. Mm-hmm. And this could be a variety of factors. So this could be that maybe they're extremely, extremely bright and they need a lot of additional challenge. Or it could be that they've got significant learning differences that are going to make it harder for them to acquire mastery over the curriculum, and they're going to need a lot more support in those situations. Or I've seen some kids that actually are really struggling with an intellectual disability. So in other words, they've got a lower, you know, they have a lower IQ. And a lot of times parents will come and they'll describe it as a learning disability, or they'll describe it as, oh, my child has dyslexia or ADHD. But once you get some really good testing, you realize that, wait a minute, this is even more involved than what you think. So these are some of the challenges that we have working with families. And the calls that we get often are with families where their child is really struggling in the school, and the school is just doesn't have the resources to be able to really fit the needs of that particular student. So,
interesting.
You know, yeah, so those are some of the big challenges that people face.
I actually want to talk a bit more about kids with special needs, because this is like, it must be one of the major issues as a parent who travels around the world, because that needs a lot of follow-up, the education of a kid with special needs. So are there any advice you can give in this situation?
Yeah, well, I did a webinar for Families in Global Transition about a month ago, and that's on the website of figt.org. Okay. So I spent an hour going into a lot of detail about that if families are really interested in knowing more. But I think that it's very important to find out, first of all, the attitude towards special needs children, whether or not they truly have a special needs department, who is heading that up, who are the people who are also on the staff, what types of needs do they serve. So, I mean, there's a huge variety of learning, exceptional learning needs. So just because they might be good at some needs doesn't mean that they're going to be good at handling all different kinds of special needs. So for parents to really investigate that, and the one thing that I really caution parents against is to beg for a school to let your child in. Mm. Because if you're begging to let the child in, it means they don't really get it, and they're really reluctant, that they're really worried that they're not really going to be able to meet the needs of that student. And you not only have to have the learning support team on board, but then if that child is mainstreamed into the regular classroom, whether it be an elementary, middle, or high school, those teachers also have to be prepared to give accommodations to students in order to meet their learning needs. So what we see sometimes are families that come to us and they've been beating their head against a wall because the teachers are uncooperative, they don't believe it, they don't see why they should be giving any special consideration to a child with learning differences, maybe because they don't even buy into it, that we see that a lot. Mm-hmm. So in those situations, if you really have a school that's resistant and doesn't want to help out a child, my advice is then just let it go, because you don't want to be fighting that battle every single day that your child is at school.
I really feel for the parents who have to deal with it, because I think it must be really, really challenging.
It is really, really challenging.
But it also comes with great advantages. So maybe we want to talk about that. I want to know, actually, from all the TCKs you met and you've helped and assessed, what do you think is the major advantage of this lifestyle?
Oh, there's some fabulous advantages. So, you know, advantages and disadvantages of everything, even if you never leave home. I think what we love about the kids who are able to make the most of this situation are usually really grateful that they've had the opportunity to see the world and interact with so many different kinds of people and so many different cultures, to have been able to see so many different places. The kids that I speak to who are in very international schools, and, oh, by the way, even if we're talking about an American school, they're very international. It's, you know, usually you'll find at least 50 to 60 different nationalities within a school. And what I see with students is that they have the ability to look beyond ethnic differences and just have friends. Mm. And it almost sounds like a cliche, but, you know, really realizing what we have in common is greater than what divides us. I think they tend to
the poster children I see who are making the most of this situation tend to be resilient, flexible, have a three-dimensional view of the world, and really enjoy diversity, enjoy a variety of experiences. They might be more adventurous, more open, have the ability to facilitate conversations between people of different cultures, and really appreciate and value that. So there's some great advantages to growing up.
That can be huge, huge assets for companies. I think TCK is in that way.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of skills that we learn as a TCK that's so much applicable to situations that are not necessarily dealing with having a global life, but also dealing with people in general. And I think we might develop better people skills because we're exposed to so much diversity that we learn how to, you know, adjust according to situation and people.
I agree. Yeah. I agree 100%. And I think that there has been a lot written about the value of this background for future employers, that they're really looking for people who are able to think more creatively and really bridge those cultural divides. So our kids are bridges. I think that's what makes them really valuable in the work. They're bridges. Yeah, they're bridges.
Yeah, wonderful. That's a great way to end. TCKs are our world's bridges.
They're our bridges.
That's wonderful. Is there anything you would like to add before we say goodbye? Because you've been sharing so many, so many great advice here. And I think we could talk for hours about this topic. But would you have any one thing you want to share before we say goodbye?
Well, you know, I think what's really wonderful is that when you meet other people who've had this lifestyle, you oftentimes feel this instant connection with someone. And you and I were talking before we started the podcast about the upcoming conference in the Netherlands for Families in Global Transition.
Yeah.
And we have more people signed up for this conference than ever before. But what makes this conference so special is that it's people coming together who've had this kind of international background, and it almost feels like a family reunion, even if you've never met somebody before. There's this instant connection. And so I just wanted to say to you, Emma, that I'm so excited that you are coming to Amsterdam in March, and that immediately I felt this sense of connection with you. And again, you know, thinking about what's coming up in March, I'm really excited that I get to see you and meet you in person. And this is kind of the beauty of the international community that is also your audience, is that we do have this connection with one another. Mm-hmm. So I'm just thrilled that you reached out to me and you asked me to be a guest. It was my pleasure. And, you know, I'm up for this anytime that you are interested. So thank you.
I just want to come back to you and say that I'm also so happy that we met through this podcast, and that I met you through FIGT actually. And I'm very happy that you brought up this conference, because Nomad Nation, I would really recommend it to you, although I've never been, but I've already talked to so many people who are part of the board, including Rebecca. I do Nomad Nation. Please check out the website of FIGT.org and check out the conference that's going to happen 10th to the 12th of March. And it's in Amsterdam, and it's 3 days of conferences related to global families, and it's about education. Is there any specific topics you can mention right now?
Move a portable identity, multicultural adjustments, and some of the difficulties and challenges and rewards, and again, creating and building something that you can take with you across borders, which is kind of what you're doing in Nomad Nation. And I just think there are so many conversations that take place. I guarantee you that no matter who you meet in this conference, it will be very easy to strike up a conversation and feel like you've just made a new friend.
Definitely. Just like the two of us. I mean, we talked just like 10 minutes before this episode, and I just feel like I know you since a long time. So thank you so much for coming to this episode. And again, Nomad Nation, really check out FIGT.org. But I would also like you to reach out to Rebecca in case you need some help to make the best decisions for your kids' education while you're relocating from a country to another. So please, Rebecca, share with us how we can find you.
Oh, thank you for asking. Okay, so our website is www.rnginternational.com. And there you'll see we have a very extensive website. We have tons of things in our resources page. We also have a blog where we blog about a lot of these different issues. We have links to the articles that we have written and published. We have also
written some chapters for in books for global nomads that people might be interested in reading. So anyway, you could also email us at Rebecca@rnginternational.com. That's my direct email. And we work with families globally, really every country in the world, pretty much.
Beautiful. I really believe in what you're doing, Rebecca.
And, thank you.
I think that a lot of parents would have a lot of value in reaching out to you. You've been sharing great advice and your experience here. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you. Anytime.
Nomad Nation, don't miss any of the great inspiration, tips, and insights that will prepare just for you. Go to tandemnomads.com and sign up for the newsletter.